Welcome back to the Diary of a CFO. Today, I'm answering questions from my email newsletter subscribers. And one of the questions I asked them was, if we were having coffee and talking about work, what would you ask me? First of all, thank you so much for all of those who responded. In this episode, I will answer four of the questions here and the rest either in other episodes or on the newsletter itself. If you're not subscribed yet, you can just go to thediaryofacfo.com. Here are the four questions of today. Number one, is the climb and reach the CFO worth it? Number two, do you enjoy the work and the people? Number three, do you have work-life balance? And number four, what helped you get there? Let's dive in. So first question, is a climb and reach to CFO worth it? Well, to me, it absolutely is. Of course, some days are fulfilling, some others are tough. And every day I have to challenge myself to see things differently because as a CFO, it feels like you're playing defense and offense at all times. At the same time, you're trying to support the business growth and you have to minimize risk and stay in compliance with reporting or debt covenants. You have to grow your staff. You have to develop your staff. You have to make things better for them. At the same time, you are also participating on other process improvement or system improvement that are organization-wide. Because at the end, the goal is to help everyone be better and be ready for what's ahead. Be ready for the future, as well as how the business is growing. I do enjoy my role every single day. I feel like I have more impact, but also more responsibilities. It can be definitely stressful at times. And for me, the reason it's worth it is because I wanted to do it, and I did. So if it's not really in your plan, how does it fit in your own vision board? With how you are and how it fits your aspirations is really something that's very subjective. For me, it's totally worth it because I've always been driven. I was never the one to sit around and wait to be trained. Sometimes I felt like others were getting automatic training, especially when we're back in the physical offices, when we're not remote, I should say. And I could hear my boss going from cubicle to cubicle, or office to office, and spending extra time at other people's desk and only coming by and say, hey, Wasia, and move on. But I didn't see it as, oh my God, it means that I won't succeed. For me, it was like, okay, that's a great opportunity because I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to write the process and share with the boss. And that's a little hack for you. If you're in a situation, you're like, where you feel like you actually need the training to go from point A to point D, let's say, and you only being shown point A to point B, document point A and point B and say, hey, I know this is not documented elsewhere, but I'm trying to understand this process. I already have A and B documented. Can you help me with C and D? And you will notice that the person, because they will see where this is going, that is beyond you, and that you're trying to make things bigger for the department, they will be willing to show you the way, because now you are documenting the process, you're making life easier for them and for others after you. So that's a little trick there. But for me, I wasn't the one sitting around. I was always driven, and I've been driven really for my whole life. I was always a 4.0 GPA student back in Ivory Coast before I came here at the age of 17 to the US. To me, math was like one of my favorite subjects. I wasn't just trying to be right. I had a little competition with some of my friends who say, can you finish the 2-hour test in 30 minutes and still get an A? Yes, that's how extra I've been. For me, it's absolutely worth it because I wanted to do it, one. And number two, some people looked at me funny when I said I wanted to become a CFO. First, within the African community, when I came here, was all, okay, you're going to be a African braider, you're going to do braids, or you have to work out at Walmart, try to be manager. You know, corporate America, they don't promote people like us. They don't do things like us. You are young, you are Black, you're an African girl with an accent. You won't be able to get there. And then I started to realize I needed to shift the people around me, but also just keep quiet about some of the goals that I had, because people will be looking at me like, I don't see it in you, because I haven't seen much people like you at a certain level. I was driven. I was like, okay, thanks, but I'm still going to do it. Like, especially because now it feels like it's not possible. I'm like, on my list, it's going to be done. For me, it's great to be here first because I wanted to do it too, because people acted like I couldn't do it. I'm like, huh, that's my, one of my favorite way to prove people wrong is like, ooh, I did it. And then number three, because I always felt like I could do more. I felt like I had the potential to do it. It wasn't that, oh, I just want to do it and I don't feel like I can. Like, I always felt like it was in me and that being able to operate at this level will allow me to really unleash my potential, really be operating within the realm of potential, my full potential. So I see it as something that's absolutely worth it. But then it comes back to you. Why do you want the role? Is it a part of status, influence, purpose? Because knowing that I can do something and being able to do it is incredibly fulfilling. Is a CFO worth it for you? If you are wondering whether this path is right for you, start by asking, what kind of impact do I want to have? How does it fit with my overall vision, with my overall view of things, the things that I want to do, the rooms I want to be in, the places that I want to visit? For me, one more thing is it shouldn't be just about compensation or money. Because I realized that there is a big gap between personal finance and being good at personal finance and actually doing the role of a CFO, of working in finance. The reason I say that is because sometimes if you are not satisfied or content or you don't find a way to live within your mean when you are, let's say, at 100K per year, it will still be difficult for you to do it even when you have more money. I know it's hard to understand. Is that, oh, because you have money, you say that? No. My car is a 2014 Toyota Highlander. I have it for 11 years. And my daughter is 11 years. So you can see about when that car came into my life, right? Because I needed a bigger vehicle to be able to put in two car seats and a double stroller because my kids are back to back. They're only 17 months apart. So daughter born 2014 and my son in 2015. So needed a bigger vehicle. I'm still in the same car. Others will say, oh, you're CFO, now you can afford a bigger vehicle. But for me, I want financial freedom. Instead of having an extra $1,000 of car payment for me, I could save that $1,000 and go on vacation cash because that's $12,000 can get you a good vacation. And that's just the way I'm thinking about personal finance. I guess I got this advice too from my first CFO. She was like, to live your best life here in America, you have to live below your means. And I've kept that with me. And so I don't do this role necessarily because I want to have the money. It's way more than that. And the reason it's way more than that is because I've trained myself to be disciplined with my personal finances where I don't resent what I do. Like, I have to do it for the money. There are other things around it. So it makes it even better. When money is not an issue for you to do the work that you want to do, I'm telling you, it's a great place to be in. That's for this first question about, is it worth it? Is it worth it to become a CFO? For me, absolutely. Now, next question. Do you enjoy the work and the people? Absolutely. I feel like as a CFO, I'm the bridge between functions and leadership, and it's incredibly rewarding. It's not always easy, but I'm enjoying the ride. As far as the people, I'm just very fortunate to be at ACE because I think that our founder, Grace Fricks, has created such a great culture because a lot of time it's tone at the top. I can say that I never felt home like I feel home at ACE. And so, yes, I do enjoy it. I do enjoy working with my accounting team, making them more strategic. If you talk to them, they'll probably tell you, oh, Wazia is a lot. And I remember a couple of weeks ago, I was talking with my AP manager, and it was after we had two new people joining our team. She said, Wasia, guess what I told them? I said, okay, tell me more. She said, I told the new people, Wasia is nice. Wasia smiles, but she means business. I was like, oh my God, that makes you scared of me. But again, for me, I really want to elevate the team. It hurts me when I see potential not be fully realized. So I want them to grow. And yes, my standards could be high, but I want them to think beyond what they do every day. So for example, whether it's a bank reconciliation, I know it's part of the month-end checklist and you say, check, I checked the bank. My next question will be, how does that balance compare to the balance of the prior month? Do you think we're having issues in liquidity? So moving from I just did it to what does it mean? What to do with that information now? It's things that I really enjoy doing, and I'm grateful that I work with a team that's receptive to grow and that appreciate to have a CFO that really want to invest in their success on the personal level, but also on technology, trying to remove all the roadblocks and getting them to be the best they can be really where they are. So I do enjoy what I do, the work that I do, the people I work with, my peers, my buddy, my COO, Shannon Stewart, my CEO, Martina, she's the bomb. She's just a great person to work with. So really enjoy my peers here and what I do. Now, next question. Do you have work-life balance? I get that one a lot, especially because I'm still active on LinkedIn. I'm doing this podcast. And we know the CFO role is no joke. You've probably read some job descriptions. Now, for me, I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life harmony, where your work and your life come together for you to have a rewarding and fulfilling life. I'm not about work-life balance. I'm more about work-life harmony. For example, what I learn on the job allows me to do other things that fulfill me, because I don't believe that fulfillment all come from one place. I also understand and came to realize that really corporate America was not built for you to be fulfilled. It was built to maximize shareholders' wealth. And so trying to get all your accomplishments, all your fulfillment out of your work, to me is a recipe for burnout and disappointment. It's that work-life harmony that allowed me to be my best self. So when I learned more about accounting finance, for example, I volunteered with the SBA as a SCORE volunteer, and that is to provide free mentoring to small business owners. And one of the business owners I was able to mentor had a lash salon. She was doing lashes, and I was able to give her advice for free. We're meeting 1 hour a week, or even sometimes 30 minutes every other week, just to check on her and allow her to grow her business. It just feels great to be able to help in that way. Similarly, now I'm on the board of HOPE, an organization that helps single parents complete their education degree, and I've been a treasurer for almost 3 years. I work on the budget, the strategic plan with the COO. I do it free because I'm able to have a job that pays me so I can do other things with that knowledge to really drive things that gives me, again, energy and fulfillment. And so I'm able to learn from what I do at HOPE, bringing to ACE, because both are not-for-profit organization. And I'm able to also learn from ACE and bring it to HOPE. And in return, make things better, both at work and in the lives of people. Because really at HOPE, for example, we have participants that come in, sometimes is former stay-at-home mom that divorced and now need to go back and get an education. We had one that graduated not too long ago and shared her beautiful story at our gala we did in March. And she said that she went to the grocery store and her daughter wanted carrots. And she said, I didn't have the $1 to buy her carrots. Now, she was living in the suburbs in the Atlanta area in Buford. If you know this area, you know it's a very nice area, but she had to let go because she had been a stay-at-home for 10 years. She had to start over. Now, fast forward, she's a registered nurse. She has her own place, and she's able to afford all the carrots. But HOPE was there in that bridge to provide assistance for rent, assistance for childcare, also with groceries, another program we have wrapped around services. And to see that growth, I mean, it's so rewarding, so fulfilling to do that. And to me, that's what part of work-life harmony is about. Because I don't think that you can completely turn off work and just spend time with your family, or turn off what you're going on in your family and do work. Like, you're not a switch. To me, you're a human being. I try to have my life optimized so I don't show up grumpy at work. And I try to have my work optimized so I don't show up grumpy when I'm having dinner with my family, because those things will spill over. If you listen to the episode I had with Cindy Wilson, the former CFO of Kickstarter, she said it so beautifully. She said, leadership is a lifestyle. And so to me, it's about being disciplined with the choices that I make in my life, if I can say, and my work. And that means having and maintaining the right standards and the right boundaries. Yes, I'm incredibly disciplined with all these things. The only thing I think in my life that I'm not disciplined with is fitness and food. But everything else, I'm good. So for example, I think the choice of your spouse is important. I was willing to stay single. My parents were divorced and I was like, if I don't find the right guy, I'm going to stay single. I was always driven. I was always ambitious. And I knew if I was going to marry, it would have to be with someone that's secure with themselves, that can be a true partner when we're raising kids, because I'm not going to shrink or dim my light to make somebody else feel better. And so when I met my husband, we'll be married now 15 years, he was like, yes, I can do this. And so he's my best friend, my supporter, love him so much. He supports me in whatever I'm doing, whatever ventures I'm getting or troubles I'm getting myself into. I cook, he cleans. I drop out the kids in the morning, he helps with the homework when they come in the afternoon. So we are a true team. Again, that concept of work-life harmony, because sometimes we think of work-life balance and we think, oh, I can work 40 hours, 20 hours, then I'll be fine because I have all this time for other things. But you could work 20 hours a week, but if you have the wrong spouse, you will still feel miserable. If you have so much chaos in your home, you will still feel miserable even if you work 20 hours a week. It's really that idea of work-life harmony. And so just like at life, I was disciplined and thank God for my husband at work, I cannot do 80 hours a week. And so I block my time. I let people know ahead of time, I'm going to be off. When I'm off, even if I see a text or a notification, I do not respond. Because the reality is you train people to treat you a certain way. Because I've seen people who are not director, don't even get to the CFO, and they work so many hours. Now, it is fine the first 3 years of your career when you're young and you don't have much responsibilities. I did that. I worked long hours when I was like 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. But then you have to be careful not to make it a habit. Otherwise, you will always feel burnout, overworked, and underpaid, regardless of the company you work for, regardless of the boss you have, regardless of your title, whether you are analyst or CFO, you will always feel that way if you don't know how to set boundaries, because unconsciously you are training people to treat you that way. And so again, this has worked for me for quite some years now. I block my time in the morning. Now I'm starting to block my time in the evening. Because sometimes I'm in so many meetings, I'm like, okay, let me carve out time to do it. And I oftentimes show offline. I actually turn my status on Teams as offline, even though I'm still working, but I don't want to be disturbed, right? And I want to show also the right signal. I don't do it all the time, but we in finance and accounting, we know how we can get. So back to the questions, Wasia, do you have work-life balance? My answer is this is not applicable. I do have work-life harmony. I have a job I love, the people I truly enjoy working with, where I feel I'm actually operating within my full potential. It allows me to do this podcast. And that tells you I'm not working 100 hours a week, right? Because I have time to do this, to do speaking, to coach, and also, most importantly, to enjoy my kids and spend quality time with my whole family. Now, next question. What helped you get there? My first answer is always, thank you, God, for allowing me to be at the right place at the right time with the right people. And now I am actually very intentional of being in the right places and connecting with the right people. The second thing is I always had a clear vision of what success looks like for me. And I've been doing this a little more, of spending more time with myself. I've actually scheduled a self-retreat where I would just meet me in the month of November, I'm going to book an hotel room not too far from my house and just spend one or two nights there to reflect. So I think having that clear vision of success have been so important to me because, you know, life goes bam, 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 and you don't realize 3 months have gone by, a year has gone by. Look at 2025 already. If you don't take time to really define what success will look like for you, then you will be distracted by the success of others. You will see others on social media and say, man, I'm behind. You will hear some advice and you get, oh, maybe I should recalculate my route and do this and do that. You will end up being aimless. And so not having a clear vision of I'm going to do this and this and this, of course, being flexible along the way, but having that vision of what success looks like for me, not necessarily in terms of role or title. I didn't know what the different steps I'll go to become a CFO. I didn't know I'll do FP&A at some point and be controlled. I didn't know all these things. I just wanted to have this. Having flexibility in between, but really having that clear vision of success for you, for me, was all about work-life harmony. I love numbers. I love a certain type of discipline. And so bringing all this together was very important to me. The third thing is I worked hard for a long time. You cannot hack yourself into success. There's no shortcut. I saw a survey of Gen Z. How much money do you think you're going to make? $1 million. Now, okay. You're going to have to do a lot of work before you get there, right? But for me, I worked hard for a very long time. My vacations were modest. I remember when I got out of school and I wanted to be a CPA, I told my husband, I cannot get pregnant for the next 2 years. Because back then, when you were taking the CPA, you had an 18-month window between the time you passed the first test to the last one. And so I was like, okay, no babies during this time. I will wake up in the morning. I will study from 5 to 6 a.m. And I'm not an early bird. So it tells you how much extra work I was willing to do for this. Sometimes it will be after month end, but after work, even if I ended at 6 p.m., I'll make a point of either going to the food court at the mall or a Whole Food Market. They had tables at a time and I could sit there and do some studying. I would squeeze some studying on my lunch break while I'm doing 2-3 people jobs. I worked hard for a long time. Same for my CMA, same for my MBA. Now people see all these letters and like, oh, you did it in like 3 years. No, it took me like 8-9 years to get all of them. But I worked hard for a long time and I did them because somebody said, you need to do it. Or CMA, you need to do it. And then when I was tired of doing all these things, that's when I sat down and reflected a little more about, okay, what else do I need? Because all these certifications are not working. You can hear that in other episodes. But the reality is you have to work hard for a long time because that's how you will know how to work smart. There is no shortcuts to that. Of course, it helps to have mentors and sponsors and people speaking into your life. Certain things you have to experience for yourself and you have to be willing to put in the work. I will say, give yourself a deadline of, I'm not going to do this for X amount of years because it's unsustainable. You have to enjoy your life. But I did work hard for a long time. And so now when I think about accounting and finance, I did AP, I did AR, I did payroll, I did treasury, I did inventory management, I did FP&A, I did taxes, I did some supply chain, helping with procurement, helping with HR, 401k audit. The list goes on because I've done so many things. Because I wanted to touch all these different things. Now, you don't have to do this, but you have to be willing to put in the work. Whatever you do, do it at 100%. The fourth thing, so the first thing was, thank God for being in the right place at the right time. And now I'm more intentional about surrounding myself with the right people. Number two, I have a clear vision of what success looks like for me. Three, I worked hard for a long time. So now I know how to work smart. And then number four, I was not afraid of investing in me, meaning I was not afraid of paying for things like courses, certifications, executive coaching, even when my company would not pay for it or reimburse me in full. I know sometimes we feel like, oh, the company is not paying for it. I'm not going to do it. No, I'm still going to do it because I know it's important. How do I get into speaking? Because I realize that when you speak at a conference, you go there for free. Okay. So That was a nice way for me. If the companies are going to pay for it, okay, maybe I need to be on some panel. They'll usually waive your registration fee, probably pay for your hotel, but you will at least get something waived. But that's just something. Otherwise, again, back to personal finance. But how are you investing in yourself? You can't just say, I'm not going to invest in me, because to me, your best investment is in yourself. Whatever it is, your best investment in yourself. And I even had a quote that I posted on LinkedIn a couple years ago that said, your career is almost like a new venture. Sometimes you have to invest your own money before other investors are willing to invest in. Those four things really combined allowed me to realize not only things that helped me, but also what makes people successful in their careers. For me, it's two words. If you have a pen, you can write it down now. If you're driving, don't do it. But to me, it boils down to two things: positioning and networking. Positioning is really your credibility and visibility, and networking with people that are 2 to 5 steps ahead of you or away from you in other functions. That's why I structured my CFO bootcamp that way. If you have not heard of it, you can go to wasiakamon.com. The next cohort starts August 8th of 2025, the time I'm doing this recording, because you need to work on the right project to gain credibility. You work hard, but you want to work hard on the right project, not on doing the same thing over and over again for years. You want to work on the right project, have the right positioning. That's the first level. That's what's going to give you credibility, because you can actually do the things that you're supposed to do, that you say you can do. And once you have the outcomes from doing those things, visibility is what you should work on next, so that you can work more on the first level, credibility. So the right project will allow you to have the right visibility if you're working on it, not just assuming it's going to do the talk for you. But all of that is amplified by networking, having the right people, like a sponsor that will help you be on the right project, like a mentor, personal board of directors that will speak into you so you can realize what are those right projects to start with. And being able to know who are the people that you should be visible to, the people that will allow you to amplify your work in your organization and also outside of your organization. So if there was a formula to me, it would be positioning X networking equal unstoppable growth. So that is what, in a nutshell, helped me get to where I am. I worked hard for a long time. I wasn't afraid to pay when I needed to. I became intentional about being in the right places, hanging out with the right people. Also, having a clear vision of what success looks like for me. This all allowed me to realize that really, if I was to go back, so if today I'm like, Wasia, what would you tell your younger self? I would say work on two things, positioning and networking. But now I realize that if I had been more intentional and more strategic about my positioning and networking early on, who knows where I'll be today, right? Because I do believe that's what leads to unstoppable growth. I love this quote by Seneca that said, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. For me, luck is what happens when positioning meets networking. And I can give you a simple example. I get an opportunity to teach a segment of Wharton Online's first ever FP&A program. Now, here's how it happened. Positioning. One, when it comes to credibility, I actually led FP&A. Two, visibility. I made it visible on LinkedIn. And I also made it visible on different stages. And I had recently spoken at the AICPA CFO conference of 2024. And the director of the program at Wharton, whom I had connected with about a year or two before he got that role, noticed. So visibility, credibility, and now networking with people when they don't even have the title that you may be aiming for. And that's something that we often miss, is I didn't network with him because he was the director of program for that FP&A program at Wharton. He didn't have that role when we connected years ago, right? Now he has it. He's in my LinkedIn feed. He sees something. He's like, hey, let's talk. I'm working on this. We talked for 30 minutes and bam, I got the role. I get to start teaching. And something that I thought would happen at age 50 just happened at age 38. So I do believe that positioning and networking are things that really make you unstoppable in your career and really anything in life when you think about it. That's why I'm so excited about the results and the success stories I'm starting hearing from my CFO bootcamp cohort. I have one person saying, oh, Wasiya, I just did some of the things we talked about LinkedIn, and now I'm getting emails about roles that I always wanted to do. She was always in accounting. Now she's getting FP&A role. And that was, again, positioning, getting her to understand what is it that you've been doing that's already FP&A before you have the title. Who should you be networking with? What should you be posting about? What should you be doing to attract those roles? And sure enough, it's working. So for me, positioning and networking is everything when it comes to how you will get to where you want to be. So that's what helped me get there. I'll say the positioning networking I learned toward the end of the journey, and that's what I'm excited about teaching now. But it worked for me in so many ways, still working for me in so many ways, and I cannot recommend it enough. So happy I have answered the questions that you had submitted. And thank you again to everyone who asked these questions. And your questions are exactly why I do this. You can probably feel in my voice, I'm excited about doing this, about sharing and helping others, because that's what I wish I had at some point in my career as well. And again, if you are wondering whether the path to the CFO is right for you, start by asking, what kind of impact do I want to have? And how am I being intentional about showing it, especially in terms of positioning and networking? If you got questions you want me to answer, whether it's leadership, your team, or growing in your role, the best way to ask is through my newsletter. You can subscribe at thediaryofacfo.com. And that's it for today's episode of The Diary of a CFO. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, and share with others. Our website is thediaryofacfo.com. That's where you can find all the episodes, access all the guest profiles, see their bios and their social media links. It is also the place where you can apply to be a guest on the podcast and have information about how you can sponsor the show. As always, if there is any topic you would like me to cover in the future, just email me at ask@thediaryofacfo.com. Again, the email is ask@thediaryofacfo.com. See you soon.